Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com. The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. After this past weekend, another wild weekend in college football as another, what was it, four top 10 teams, and should have been five, fell as, Miami keeps getting some beneficial calls.
Don't blow 25.
Yeah, that's true. But Cal looked like they had Miami, but some crazy games across college football over the weekend. Auburn goes down for the eighth consecutive time to the Georgia Bulldogs. 31-13 was the final score. We'll talk about that and anything that you would like to talk about sports-wise. We being the regular crew here in the studio on this Monday. It's Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews from AuburnSports.com. B-Matt, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great. You know, I'm just enjoying the off week, sunning, fishing, you know, doing all the regular stuff you do.
I didn't know what regular stuff you
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
What was your Brian? What was your musing today? I want to know. Because I thought I had a pretty good one this weekend, but we can talk about it in a sec. What was yours?
Okay, Over the Rainbow, 80 something years since it was first recorded.
That is a good one. Yeah. So I was reading up on how yesterday, October 5th, is a really significant day in.
Yesterday was the 6th.
Okay, then Saturday the 5th. Then Saturday the 5th was a really significant day in music album releases. You got Led Zeppelin 3 was released on October 5th. Elton John "Goodbye Yellow Brick Road" was released. Nice. Police "Regatta de Blanc" was released, which is by the way, white reggae is the translation of Regatta de Blanc. They were having a little fun there. Just some big time. REM "Automatic for the People" was an octave, and they're an Athens band. We can pivot back to the football game if we must. I think the first what was the first Beatles single? But would that have been "Love Me Do"? Is that possible?
That's possible.
I
couldn't tell you
because I believe that was also an October 5th sort of deal. So it was a big weekend for music anniversaries. So and "Somewhere Over the Rainbow" really good yep. pull too.
86 years ago, Judy Garland recorded it for the first time. It's been covered over 5,000 times since.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that many have been a whole lot better than the original.
Nope.
It's cliche, but that movie, 86 years, that puts you in the late 30s?
Yeah.
Yeah, 38?
Yeah. Yeah.
That movie holds up a lot better than your average movie from the 30s. Like, there's a reason.
It does. Of course, it wasn't really set that much in it there. I mean, it's like poor farmers. But I mean, other than that. I mean,
oh, sure. No, so you're saying it was smart to go to the fantasy world early.
Yeah, that helps make it last, don't you think?
Yeah, I think rather than staying in contemporary rural Kansas in the mid 30s.
Yeah,
I think I think it was probably the right call. But not. So maybe one of the many. Also, the music's great, isn't it? Like, just, I mean, top notch songs in the whole Wizard of Oz soundtrack. Oh, yeah. But anyways, yeah. You know what? Saturday was too busy for college football for us to break down 30s music too much.
Yeah, you're right. It was a crazy day. We'd love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts. Drew is at the controls. He will be answering your calls on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. Now, we will attempt to answer them here, but I mean, Drew will be fielding the calls, and then we'll try to respond.
Am I the only one who made the trip? Did Brian, you skipped it? this weekend too?
Yes, Stoltz and Henry went up for us. So yes, I was.
Yeah, saw Stoltz in the presser a little bit, but my first trip to Athens since the blackout in 07. So I was there So I was there for the first game of the winning streak.
Hopefully, you're there for the first and the last.
We'll see. Well, you know what's incredible? There have been big upsets in this series in 1986, 1996, 06, and 16.
Yep.
In all four of those years, Brian, one of the two teams in the Auburn Georgia game was favored by 10 or more points and lost outright.
I like
in 86, 96.
Has Auburn won any of those?
Nope.
I'm just thinking. No. It's like 86 was the hose game. 96 was the overtime game.
06 was the Matt Stafford freshman.
Was Matt Stafford. Oh, my goodness.
16 was.
So that doesn't. Well, the thing is, it's very unlikely. I mean, of course, who knows
if someone's
Auburn's going to be favored next year.
If
we're in for a fun ride between now and then.
Was 96 the year they threw that long pass for a touchdown late? From like the 40 or the 50.
Yeah. Yeah. The
was game that the year?
That sent it to overtime.
That sent it to overtime, right?
Sure
and
did.
And then won.
Sure did. It's like interfere. Yep. Don't let that pass be caught.
But yeah.
The year ends in 6, there's been a big upset in this series 4 straight times. So that's good news for 2 years from now.
Unless Auburn's favored. Somehow.
No, Auburn's been,
they won't be.
Auburn's been favored in this one.
Auburn was favored in those other
ones. We'll see. But a huge upset nevertheless. Yep. But no, I got to go to Athens for the first time since 07. And I thought the pregame atmosphere was outstanding. And you know, it's a totally different vibe than Auburn, but still, you know, a lot of barking. But it's, you know, a cool town nevertheless. Kirby was sort of upset about the. Do you see those quotes about? Yeah. I guess it was he said it was the first time he can remember as the coach that he was disappointed in the atmosphere and the fans. He thought it was kind of.
Well, they've gotten used to beating Auburn, and they sort of expected.
I guess that must be or winning SEC games in general at home, since it's been so long since. They haven't really played a lot of close games in Athens the last 4 or 5 years, and maybe the fans have gotten maybe there were fans who were angry about the Alabama loss the week before. I don't know, but seeing Kirby sort of chastise the lack of atmosphere in the stadium was a little bit surprising. I thought Auburn had chances, you know, it felt like the least winnable of Auburn's 4 losses as far as what they would have needed to do to actually win the game. As a team, Georgia is – they're one of the best first down offenses I've seen in years, right? Like, was it –
it was second and short all day.
All day. I mean, Ferg had the numbers on Georgia's offense as a third down team, and they were – it was third and short, like more than half the time, and that's just. I mean, it's you take Carson Beck out of low percentage situations. You surround him with that kind of talent. Don't take anything away from Carson Beck himself, because he's probably an NFL player and probably someone who's going to be expected to be a pretty good one early. He's what, 23 of 29 in the game. I mean, so it was probably too easy all day for the Georgia offense. And that means that the Auburn offense was going to have to be spectacular, and they were pretty good until
they were pretty good
until I think the wheels fall off with that first play in the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. and from that point on, Georgia's several degrees better than Auburn, you know, from that moment the rest of the game, but the epiphany I had. Driving home, Bill, and Ferg wrote about this. I talked about it endlessly on the podcast yesterday. It's so strange how, especially if you isolate the 4, and I know people want to talk about Peyton Thorne, and we can talk about that 4th-and-1 play. Like, I get it, but and I sent you some text messages about this, right? Like, it's strange how in the 4 power conference games. Jarquez Hunter and to a degree Damari Alston have been so effective and touched the ball so relatively little.
Well, he touched it exactly his average on the season times. Coming in. 13 carries per game is mm-hmm. what he was averaging.
It's not enough.
And he got 13 carries
not
at 7 yards a pop. No, you're right. There's no way that anyone could look at that and go, oh, that's fine. That's all it needs.
The hypothesis, you know, the sort of the theory I have would be Hugh Freeze is calling plays for the offense he wants to have a year from now or 2 years from now, as far as where the strengths of the offense are. You know, I think in the ideal Hugh Freeze offense, you got a rock solid pass blocking game. You got a quarterback you trust to make every throw quickly and decisively. You got multiple receivers open. It's, you know, your running backs are fast, undersized, they helpful in the pass game. And, you know, hey, capable blockers too. This is a team where it really feels like the offense should be running through Jarquez and Damari. Like the numbers,
there's no question in my mind, it should be.
I mean, the numbers I sent Bill. So in the four games, Brian, in the Cal game, Jarquez and Damari combined 14 carries, 78 yards. Auburn throws it 27 times.
Yeah.
In the Arkansas game, with Hank Brown making his first career start in the SEC, Jarquez and Damari carry it combined 15 times. Auburn throws it 35 times. In the Oklahoma game, Jarquez and Damari carry it combined 24 times. Auburn throws it 32 times. And against Georgia this weekend, Jarquez and Damari, 17 combined carries. Auburn throws it 27 times. Now, those numbers don't include when it's a pass play that turns into a run play because Peyton Thorne scrambles or gets sacked. And those plays also don't include designed runs for Peyton Thorne. That's just
which there were a few Saturday, and they were pretty effective.
They were pretty effective, aside from the I'd say
designed run plays for Peyton. That was not a designed run play for Peyton.
Yeah, fourth and one's a different thing. But no, it just feels like if there's a recalibration or a re-engineering that needs to happen. I know some folks would say look at the quarterback position, and they can reevaluate that too. I still think that the opinion around the program is that Peyton Thorne gives them a considerably better chance to win than any other option they have right now. I would think the recalibration would be there need to be more carries by the run. There need to be more designed runs for the running backs.
Forget the PO.
Here's a goal for the Ark. Here's a goal for
a lot of people are PO'd. You know?
here's a goal for the
Missouri.
Here's a goal for the Missouri game.
A goal
for the Missouri game. Attempts by Jarquez and Damari. That number.
It needs to exceed 20.
No. Should be greater than pass attempts by Auburn in the game. How about that? Combined rushing attempts by Jarquez and Damari.
It depends on how things are going.
Sure, it can depend on how the Auburn defense is playing too.
If you're down, then I don't know that if you get down like 10, I don't know that you.
Auburn was down double digits to Georgia, and giving it to Jarquez ended up being the best way to get back in the game rather than asking Peyton Thorne to do everything himself. I still don't think it feels like your best shot play to play, even in a multiple score game, is to hand the ball to Jarquez and Damari.
I don't disagree with that.
More than that, and I would say,
I'm just saying, I don't know that I would say it just has to be. It has to be much more. There has to be more emphasis on the running game. I'm not saying that,
it's
always going to have to be more than your pass
attempts. I watched the Lions last Monday, who went 19 for 19 through the air. Jared Goff, 18 for 18, and there was a receiver who threw a touchdown pass to Goff. 19 for 19 through the air. Even an offense that goes 19 for 19 through the air, they handed the ball more to Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery more than they passed it. Like the combined attempts for the two running backs in that game were great, and that was an offense going 19 for 19. Like, I just feel like when you've got weapons like Jarquez and Damari, and you know, and maybe greater than or equal to is the, but you know what I mean, Bill? Like, I would shoot for that. I would shoot for, can we find a way to get these guys that involved, until, especially against Missouri, right? Like, we can talk about how some of the other games
they,
this weekend.
They got stomped.
This feels like
they were manhandled by A&M.
Yeah, this feels like an opportunity for Auburn to see if they're better than another team at the line of scrimmage, and if they are, especially in the run game, then lean on the most, and not to undersell Lambert Smith, who is on pace for 1,000 yards and a super dynamic weapon and every bit the receiver Auburn was hoping for in the portal.
I think he's better.
I agree. But this feels like the recalibration, it's certainly, it's not as simple as feed Jarquez, because I don't want to undersell the games Damari has been having of late, including Saturday.
The run needs to be the priority. And if teams can't stop your run, then you're going to beat them. If they can stop your run, then you can do some other things. But it needs to be more in that than we're gonna throw, and then we'll see what we can do running the ball.
Yeah, and I think we have to understand that because of the RPO, those runs are going against usually ladder boxes. However, we're also not seeing the effect of what you can do with a power running game, and that is by running for 2.5 yards or 3 yards in the first quarter against a tighter box, what that looks like late in the third quarter and the fourth quarter when those defenders get tired. Mm-hmm. They can't tackle those guys as much as they were, and Jarquez is running through those tackles and getting long runs, maybe even touchdowns on them. So, I don't think Jarquez would average 7 yards a carry with 30 carries, but he might completely dominate the fourth quarter of a game if you get to it doing that.
And I would argue the existence of Damari and, to an extent, Jeremiah Cobb means it's not necessarily Jarquez who needs to get those 30 carries. But if, I mean, the EPA numbers and I would say the eyeball test would tell you that's the most potent part of this Auburn offense. I mean, yes, the passing game has big play threats too, but it feels very boom or bust. And you're asking the offensive line to maybe play against their strength when you're asking them to pass block right now.
Certainly the left side.
Yeah, so I mean, and we'll see.
Auburn's tackles struggled Saturday, period. Yeah. I mean, too tall, got hurt. And didn't come back.
But I wonder how much more
he wasn't having his best game before he got hurt.
I wonder how much more we're going to see of Too Tall. They've tried to have him play through pretty obvious discomfort for a couple of games now, and I wonder if Saturday was sort of the end of that experiment. And it's going to be he needs to take at least a couple of games.
Good thing is you got 2 weeks right now.
You got 2 weeks right now, but I wonder if it's maybe you take a couple of weeks and see if Too Tall is better off afterwards, and in the meantime, is it Wade and Lewis?
Yeah,
at tackle.
Yeah,
Lewis did struggle. I think he was.
He did. We haven't seen Tyler Johnson in a while, but yeah, and then Braden.
We saw Chambers at the end of was it Cal? We saw Chambers, right. At the end. I wonder if that's even an option if Auburn is sort of looking for answers at tackle.
I don't know. But I mean, they do appear to be better pushing and running run blocking than they do it at pass blocking.
And I think you would also take some pressure. I mean, it's sort of it's almost like cliche football, but the more effective you can be with that aspect of your offense, giving it to guys like Jarquez and Damari, the interior run game and the run game just away from the quarterback position. Like the more you can do that, the more dangerous the play action becomes as well. And I feel like there's opportunities there. So I don't know. We'll see. What Auburn does coming out of a disappointing first half for sure. But the feeling, as frustrated as folks were after the game Saturday, because there was not Auburn could have played the same way Saturday, Bill. But if you're 5-1 after that game, you're not nearly as frustrated as you are when.
No, that's not one where you feel like, well, we should have won that ball game and we messed up. You might have been able to hang in there a little bit better.
But are you feeling?
I don't feel much different than I did the week before. It's like I sort of expected that Saturday.
You're feeling like some of the things that you were hoping would get better or get much better after Cal or Arkansas.
Auburn's not turning the ball over as much. They've only had one turnover in the last two games.
How about that?
That is
can't force them though. That's a big problem. That defense.
It
not
really
forcing
is.
Turnovers, right?
And it's funny. I mean, the defense, and I know we got to get to break, and we'll talk about this as well. The defense has pretty much played well, but at times they just can't get a team off the field. I mean, there are a couple of critical possessions, it seems like, when and it's different things that'll happen. It's not just a player blowing an assignment. I mean, it can be a critical penalty, which it seems like a couple of times happen, and all of a sudden the team extends and they get a drive, and you're behind, and you're playing from behind. So we'll talk about that and more. We'll get to the phones as well. We need to get to our first break, though. Yellowhammer, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Hip pain is not to be taken.
11390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And we'll get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Yellowhammer is up first. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So, anyway, here's my thing here. When I'm watching a football game, I like to focus on the line of scrimmage because there's two things I'm real interested in. I want to see when either team's on offense, how well does your line protect the quarterback and give him some comfort in the passing game? And then when either team's on defense, I like to see, well, how good are you at taking that comfort away? And so Georgia kind of won that little equation, and so they won the game.
Yeah, Georgia is – I don't know how many teams are going to win that aspect of the game against Georgia this year. Alabama was able to jump out to a big lead and then weather the storm when Georgia surged back. I would venture to say neutral field. I mean, Georgia's favored against everybody but Alabama. We'll see what Texas maybe.
I would think neutral field Georgia's probably favored.
I know. Like, I think that's – and again, that's not to explain away a 2-4 start by Auburn by saying, you played maybe the most talented team in the country and you did it on their field, because there are still pertinent things to talk about from the game and from the first half of Auburn's season. But it was a tall task Saturday, and a big reason why is because Georgia, Kirby's built a buzzsaw at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Even if they'd struggled to establish a run game, you still saw why folks thought they were going to be able to have one, because ETN is good.
He related to an ETN brother that played at Clemson?
He is the brother of the running back who may have got his job stolen by Tank Bigsby yesterday in Jacksonville. Biggest game of Tank's young NFL career so far. But yeah, he's the younger former Florida running back now at Georgia, and he had a slow start to the season, but he was important.
Very shifty and
yeah, he was important. He was important on a couple big plays for them.
Yeah.
Well, one other thing I noticed when Georgia lined up their defensive down linemen, they'd overload it hard to our left tackle side. And if you're trying to deny us of the deep ball, why not just overwhelm the poor old left tackle? is that the way you saw it?
Well, it looked like – actually, it seemed like to me they had more guys lined up against Auburn's right side than they did the left side when I was watching. That's what Hugh Freeze has, talked about, and his philosophy would be that the quarterback should be able to go up and see what they're doing and check into the right place.
And that brings us to 4th-and-1,
yep.
Right? Because I went to the post-game presser, Bill. Talked to...
Yeah, you asked a question.
I asked Peyton Thorne the question about the 4th-and-1. I also asked Hugh Freeze about sort of getting...
That was a really interesting answer.
It was a really interesting answer from Peyton. It made me wonder if I should have rephrased my question.
I wanted to know the rest of the story.
Yeah, it was. You know, Paul Harvey a little bit. But no, I asked Coach Freeze about getting receivers other than Lambert Smith more involved in the offense, since he seemed to be taken up. Like, I mean, nothing against Lambert Smith, of course, but I think of Auburn's contributions at the receiver position Saturday.
He catches everything that is thrown.
He catches everything. Malcolm had a couple of catches.
Malcolm had a touchdown that he should have.
He also had the deep ball that Peyton couldn't have placed any better. No,
hit him between the ones.
Couldn't have placed any better. And there was I think Robert Lewis had a catch too, but it was still, I mean, it was a pretty quiet day for receiver at Auburn. But then the understanding I had, because Connor Lue was there, Jarquez was there, Thorne and Hugh Freeze. So Auburn breaks out of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the third quarter ends. Break, yeah. Auburn lets the clock run down as it's fourth and one.
Right.
And they have plenty of time between the third and fourth quarter.
Do you think Auburn should have run a play before the third quarter ended?
Because they had
some momentum with two 8-plus yard plays on second and third down. Because remember, this series starts with.
My feeling was when I looked up and saw the game clock, I'm thinking, let it run. Make sure you get the play.
Because it's first down sack after a couple of plays. First down sack, second down Jarquez run for nine.
Their sacks, didn't their sacks? I mean, it seemed like their sacks were first down
sacks.
First
down sacks, seemingly drive killers, although this one, obviously, Auburn fights back and has a chance there. But, okay, so Auburn.
First play of the game was a sack.
That's right. Auburn gets.
Yeah, it was.
And Auburn still got a first down.
Auburn starts the fourth quarter.
Fourth and one. Yep.
Breaks the huddle.
Where was the ball? The 43, something like that?
I believe the 43 is correct. Yeah, I'll pull it up. Auburn's
side of the field.
According to Hugh Freeze at the postgame press conference, the play that was called, Justin Ferguson asked the first question, play that was called was a dive for Jarquez up the middle.
He said dive left.
Mm-hmm. I would guess, based on hearing the explanations from Thorne and Jarquez and Connor Liu, Peyton Thorne gets up to the line of scrimmage, diagnoses that Georgia has the right defense to stop a halfback dive left, and decides to switch the play to a zone read. I don't know if that message gets to the Georgia offensive line, but I believe that's
the Auburn offensive
line. I'm sorry. I don't know if that message gets to the Auburn offensive line.
That does not appear to when you watch...
I think the switch happens when Jarquez switches sides. Like when you see
he got him to his right hip, right?
And then switches to the left.
He was in the pistol and he got him.
Yes. And then switches him to his hip. And I believe when Jarquez shifts in the backfield, that is Peyton Thorne switching the play to a zone read. And then I believe reading one of the defensive linemen based on his postgame explanation.
Yeah, it wouldn't have gone well to the right side with either. Jarquez was going to be contacted as soon as the ball was given to him, but then Peyton didn't have a shot.
I regret not asking Peyton about calling a timeout in that moment because
Hugh Freeze said the only thing he could do would have been call timeout.
Hugh Freeze,
let me remind everybody that Hugh Freeze can speak to Peyton for 15 seconds into that play. Yeah. Number one.
And Auburn has an offense.
Number two, if it's going the way he doesn't want it to go, call time a timeout.
Just an addendum to one, though.
What's the score? 21-10?
21-10. Yeah.
Auburn scored a touchdown and got a stop.
Auburn also has an offensive coordinator and a quarterback's coach who are, at least one of them is on the headset as well.
Right.
Right? Like Peyton is talking to multiple people who – because I don't know if Hugh Freeze can talk back, right? Someone is allowed to
– I'm not sure how many – voices there can be to the
I would think that when there's confusion is that a safe way to when there's confusion,
the head coach can call time.
Yeah,
he can run to the official and call
when it's
time.
When it's a land of confusion on the offensive line and the quarterback.
That's a good slogan for this team.
The land of confusion is where it's a good Genesis song.
Yeah,
when that's going on, it's
welcome to Auburn, land of confusion.
I would say that feels like a moment for a timeout instead because
that's a critical play.
It's a gotta have
you're
it.
Giving them the ball in plus territory on your side of the field if you don't convert.
Yeah, I would say it's usually the end of the game. Although Auburn did stop a team in the fourth quarter up 21-10 and did not, in fact, win that game earlier this season against Oklahoma. So it's not the end of the world, but it's a critical play in that moment. It imploded and was a critical wound as far as Auburn's chances of really making a stand the rest of the game.
No question about it. All right, it's 27 minutes away from 5, so we're behind here getting to the bottom of the hour break. Spectre, hang on. You're up first when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and right back to the phones we go. Inspector is up next. Hey, Inspector.
Hey, guys. Y'all were talking about the fourth and one, right? All right. I was talking to Jacob today on the line about that, and I reviewed the film several times, and I've come to the conclusion that the offensive line was no matter what Peyton said, they were going to run the play that the coach called.
They were blocking. It looked like they were blocking for a run to the left. And that's one of the things Dan was saying. I wonder if the offensive line got the check, because they blocked and it appeared there was even a hole there to the left, didn't
it? Well, fourth and one in Sanford Stadium may not be the best time to try to change the play call, right?
You're right about that, Brian. It's pretty darn loud there.
Yeah, I think only two people got the check. That was Peyton.
And that's a couple of weeks ago, Spector, we talked about, I heard an offensive coordinator.
That's why you called timeout then.
I heard an offensive coordinator speak one time, and he was talking, it was Mike Martz, a Super Bowl winning Rams offensive coordinator. He talked about why his offenses had no audibles, and one of the examples he cited was your quarterback could make the correct audible, but if only 9 or 10 of the offensive players hear it, and
it's not going to work, most likely.
It's not, even if it's the correct call at the line.
Just imagine if maybe 3 or 4 of your offensive players get the play.
I'm not sure 8 of the other 10 players got the message from Peyton in the moment.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lewis had a bad game, but not completely bad, because on that play, Lewis, Deal, and Fairweather, they opened a hole a truck could run through. And if he hadn't checked that, if Hunter would have been over on the other side, he'd still be running. Yeah, I can see why he was so upset at Peyton.
Oh, yeah. But again, you got to call timeout.
But again, you're on the phone, on the mic with him for 15 seconds. You could have called a timeout, or you could have made it impossible for him to change the play.
And I would
that's
add,
on the head coach.
And I would add too, Spector, that we've heard so much about wanting Peyton to read the defense and play the numbers game. And I wonder if in that moment Georgia showed him the numbers pre-snap that say, don't run it right where that play was called. You know what I mean? And so, again, we've wondered about the amount of responsibility that this offense seems to be placing on the quarterback and the number of plays that seem to run through the quarterback, either pass attempts or rush attempts. Like, again, I mean, it seems strange when you've got two running backs that are, I want to get the stat right, Bill, but if you just isolate the top 30 running backs and their top 30 rushers in the conference, Jarquez and Damari are in the top 10 in yards per attempt. Like they are two of, now you have guys who have like one run for 55 yards or something that have skewed it. But like of guys who get the ball a decent amount, Jarquez and Damari are among the top 10 most productive runners in the league this year. And yet it seems like it's an offense that's really asking the quarterback to have the ball on 60-70% of the plays, which feels like a miscalculation.
Yeah,
in the moment.
I mean, what it looks like, and again, here we are. We're at the midpoint of the season, so we're sort of evaluating how things are going. We've heard this in the past that hey, Hugh Freeze is a quarterback-driven coach. He's a coach that is very quarterback friendly. Well, maybe. The pieces on this team are better suited to being running back driven as opposed to being quarterback driven. That's what it appears, at least.
Spector?
Did we lose Spector?
Good stuff, Spector. Appreciate the phone call.
334-321-1390. And Bill is up next. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I was at the game Saturday. I thought it was interesting what Kirby Smart said, that the crowd didn't seem as raucous as they usually are over there. Maybe they just so used to beating us, they don't really.
I'm afraid that's the truth.
Yeah.
It's sad but true. It really is.
I walked all the way across the campus a couple of times, and nobody barked at me or nothing. They were really pretty. Everybody was pretty cordial. I was surprised, but we're running out of games to turn this thing around. I'm like you, Brian, and the rest of you. That fourth and one, that's where the game got away from us. You can't give the ball to them at where we did at that particular point of the game. And it seemed like you get the rear end and their head wired together and that offensive staff. Everything looks just disjointed. You know, they run the ball pretty well. They throw the ball okay. But that was a big play to squander on that fourth and one because that game got away from us there.
It looks disjointed at the worst times. That's when it tends to fall apart.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just at the worst times. And, you know, they had a chance to stay close in that game. I don't think we ever chanced them to win that thing, but I was proud of the effort of the guys. I thought they showed up, and, you know, that last score kind of made it look worse than it was. They could have got a good account of themselves, but it's not like they're, I hate to say this, guys, but it's like they're not getting much help from the sidelines. And I was just, you know, I don't know. It just, like I said, it was, they didn't get embarrassed. They did the best they could, and sometimes that's all you could ask. And I'm a little disappointed with the whole offensive, with whatever the coaches are trying to do. It just, you know, like you said, Brian, it always seems to happen at the worst freaking time.
Yep. It's a shame. Yeah. And, I guess, and we've harped on this, but the communication between head coach and quarterback is just not working correctly for me right now.
And shouldn't that be working correctly at game 6 or 7? I mean, good Lord.
Should have been working in week one, in my opinion, especially when you got a six-year quarterback and a very veteran head coach.
Yeah, exactly. It just, you know, it was disappointing to, like all of you said, fourth and one, and call a freaking timeout and get things straight. Anyway, I enjoyed the day. It was a nice day. I just wish we could get game a little closer. But nobody swore at me. I didn't get
that's good. You know, that is nice.
I was stunned. I walked all over that place, and nobody said a word to me. So, well, some Georgia people with me. Maybe they were mine.
Do you wonder if you would have seen a different atmosphere following a win in Tuscaloosa? Like if Georgia holds on and wins that game the week before, do you think it's any different Saturday as far as, like, I can't imagine people, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm not sure how big a game we are to them anymore.
Yeah,
I
mean,
we have
exactly right there, right? Yeah. I think you're right.
Sad.
All right, guys, I appreciate the time.
8 in a row, and I think 17 or 20.
Yeah.
17 was Auburn's last win in the series, but Georgia won the SEC championship game rematch that year. So 13's your last year without an unavenged loss to Georgia. And 2005, Brandon Cox was your last.
And you look at some of those Auburn wins, they were very fortunate to win those games.
Yeah, well, of course, both teams were great, incredible wins.
In a lot of the series
when it was back and forth.
Right, when it was back, right.
Lately, it hasn't been, Georgia's lucky that they escaped by the skin of their teeth. That has not been the case.
But
Georgia has been the better team.
Yep.
And the better team has won, and a lot of the time, convincingly.
It's pretty surprising. I mean, Brian's right, though, in that Auburn is two remarkable fourth down conversions away from being from having two wins in this 2010 and 2017 would be your two wins.
Yep.
Right.
You know,
I mean, 2017 they dominate them here at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
2010 is pretty convincing too.
Yeah.
You know, the Cam win over freshman Aaron Murray is pretty convincing. That game's, I guess, mostly remembered for the Nick Fairley kerfluffle.
No, they were driving to tie or win the game, weren't they? And then Nick Fairley blew it up. Was that not right?
I think Auburn's got a lead. Auburn pulls ahead and has a pretty significant lead in the second half of the 2010 Georgia game.
What a lot of people forget is after the prayer at Jordan-Hare, they nearly came down and scored. Remember that?
No, I don't. I just remember what happened. I don't remember that at all.
Oh, yeah, it's over. I didn't. Oh, man. Yeah. Like, three plays, and they're at the 25 or 30 yard line.
Yeah, Auburn wins 49-31 in 10 and sort of pulls away. Georgia has an early 21-7 lead in that game, and then Auburn comes back and holds off. And then there's some ugliness there at the end.
Well, Aaron Murray was just throwing himself into Nick. Nick had nothing to do with that. I don't know why Georgia fans and Aaron's mother were so upset about it.
Still are. All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. John, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
For loving expert care, 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, final segment of hour number one, and right back to the phones, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Pretty good.
Good. First time I've called this year. I've kind of been, as you said a few minutes ago, I was kind of waiting the season's half over, and I'm kind of just withholding my fire. The people I sit around and everybody wants to hang Peyton and all this stuff, and I just think the problems go deeper than that. I think, you know, we could run Jarquez Moore and Damari Austin more, but I don't think we have the offensive line to line up and just cram it down somebody's throat. I don't think you can extrapolate Jarquez's 7 yards a carry and extrapolate that over 25 carries and say he'd run for 175 yards. I think we've been successful this year in making first downs, running the ball on 39 and passing the ball on 32 and being unorthodox and trying to not be so predictable. I think this is a hole we talked about. I think we're still struggling with the $49 million contract. I firmly believe that. I think it, you know, we're just in a deeper hole than we are. And it's made me, you know, when you hear these preseason prognostications and everybody comes out in May and June and says, well, Auburn won 6 last year and with the recruiting they've done, they ought to win 7 or 8. Well, I think this is a better team than last year, but we ain't going to make it to 6. And I think you can't account for the 15 turnovers that lead the country. I don't think anybody can. I don't think anybody can predict that's going to happen. And I just think they've come at such inopportune times. I don't, you know, whether it's Peyton's fault, the receiver's fault, the running back's fault, the line's fault. But offensively, we aren't good enough to overcome the 2 Olays by 73 in the first half. And we aren't good enough on the third drive. He gets a legal procedure penalty on 3rd and short or 2nd and short. And it just backs us up. And I just don't think if we're 1st and 10 and we give the ball to Jarquez and he gets 2 and it's 2nd and 8, then we can come back and give the ball right back to him and make it 3rd and 2 or 3 to make it a makeable running the ball situation. I think we're better. I think we're improving. I think we have some noticeable flaws. But I think we also haven't had games this year like Maryland or like New Mexico State or like LSU. And I think too much stock was put into last year with the Auburn and Georgia games. Auburn should have, could have won. But I think in retrospect, those were aberrations. And I think we needed to bottom out. And I think maybe the Oklahoma game was the bottom out. Maybe Saturday was. I don't know. But I thought, you know, the 4th and 1 was a real turning point. But I thought Auburn really had the shot on the drive before when Jarquez made the run and made it 14-10. And we had 2 or 3 opportunities on 3rd and 4th down to stop those guys.
That's right. It was 14-10 and Georgia scored.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I mentioned early. I mean, the defense has to share some of the blame as well.
Correct.
The opening possession of the game, you have a penalty which keeps their drive going, and they score. They score just before the half again. If you just allow only a field goal there before halftime, it's not nearly as much momentum. And you're exactly right, John. After the touchdown cutting it 14-10, you desperately need to get them off the field.
Get the ball back.
John, the only game this year, the only loss, I would say, I came away thinking the Auburn defense played really well and the team still lost, was Oklahoma. Because that's a game where you have the two big plays by the Oklahoma offense, but largely it's a drought, and Auburn's defense does a sensational job of keeping them off balance. I thought there were in the Cal game, I thought the secondary had a really, really, really rough day, and then especially in the first half, and then Arkansas just over and over again on third down, and it was different aspects of the defense, you know, whether it was the pass rush or the secondary or penalties, it was a kind of a buffet of different things going wrong against Arkansas. Right. Georgia feels like the most forgivable, right? But I still understand what you mean, where it's you got to play so well to beat that team there.
Right. And I thought that, you know, if you look at the stats, and I know that doesn't mean anything, Auburn's close in first downs, they're close in time of possession, they're close in total yards. They didn't have as many penalties as they had, but they couldn't make the big play at the right time, and that's so much of everything. And I thought that drive when they made it 21-10, and I know Andy got a little bent out of shape a couple of times on the spot, but for whatever reason, and you know, Georgia's a good team. I mean, let's don't kid ourselves. But I watched that game Saturday night, and we don't even have the offensive line that Arkansas has. And I'm trying.
Arkansas. Remember, Arkansas got a player or two that Auburn really want. Fernando Carmona. You think that could have been helped? John, great stuff. We're out of time for hour number one. That's some very good points that John brought up. We'd love to hear from you in hour number two, which is coming up here on the Monday Drive.
7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the second hour of the show, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Love for you to join us. We have a call holding on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. You can get in line, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go ahead and get to the Drive hotline, and Jeremy gets us started. Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. I want Auburn and Georgia to get back to the point where the fans treat each other like Dodgers and Padres fans treat each other.
I can't endorse the Dodger behavior yesterday. I do not like fans throwing stuff on the field in any situation.
Was the fan that was killed, was that a Dodgers Padres?
Oh no! You mean the fight? No, I was a Giants fan.
There was Dodgers
Giants rivalry is no joke either. Yeah. That's an LA San Francisco thing.
Yeah.
In every sport. But no, you're. I mean, we've it does appear that, you know what, the win loss record has a lot to do with that rivalry cooling off, Jeremy.
It does. I also saw over the weekend where Clemson has passed us in all time wins now.
Oh wow!
If you really want to make Auburn fans feel like crap, that'll hit you right smack in the face.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the Auburn-Georgia series was tied up, and even the total scores or total points from each team was almost equal.
Yeah, it was exactly.
And I would, and I do. I mean, Clemson has had one of the better 15-year stretches of any D1 program. I mean, you look at the Dabo era at Clemson has been incredibly fruitful.
Aside from Alabama, it's been a, you know.
And even then, they've, oh, you mean like aside from the right?
Over the last, yeah.
Oh, sure. I mean, but like, yeah, no, Dabo's had one of the better runs any coach has ever had at any school there at Clemson. But still, you're right. That's a tough one to see on the record book.
Does any of that make you feel better about Auburn right now?
No.
No, it doesn't. Guys, the first play of the game, we don't look like we know what we're doing. We come out of a timeout in between fourth quarters. We don't look like we know what we're doing. Georgia, every third and short that they get, what are they going to do?
Oh, you know, oh, no, that I mean, they can run back, you know, on a short fourth down like they did to pick up, but no, you got to be ready for ETN. You got to be ready for ETN.
Even though he's not big, he's just so shifty and hard to.
I'm not talking about the play call. What's Georgia going to do if it's third and short?
What you mean pre-snap?
They hurry to the line.
Oh, yeah. That offense is so – I mean, yeah, they're so good at stuff like that.
Well, they do that, and they caught Auburn. They caught Auburn on the very first possession of the game.
Yep. They caught us. We acted the whole game like we didn't know they were going to do that. They've done that ever since Kirby got there. I've watched enough Georgia football over the last few years since Kirby got there to know.
Well, it makes sense for any team to do that.
If it's third and less than four – they've got third and short. The personnel they got on the field, and they've got a play they're going
to
run.
No, everybody should do that. If you've got decent enough personnel to be able to convert a third and short, you should never allow the defense to sub.
They play the substitution game on both sides of the ball. You know, waiting until your offense is subbed, and then taking their time, making sure the defense has the right people on the field and they're where they need to be, and then on offense. Catching your defense napping and attacking when you're not they do that so well, and like you said, they've done it since he got there, and it's the mark of a really well coached team.
Well, and my whole point is, in those third and shorts, they're going to hurry to the line and get lined up. You better have your guys ready if it's second down and you get them stopped short. Don't turn and look to the sidelines. Turn around and get lined up. We are so unprepared for everything. It's not just the big moments. It's everything. If the other team kicks a ball 2 yards deep in the end zone, what are we going to do with it?
Run it out, and once a game, you're going to get called for a block in the back. Yeah. I mean, my wife was like, they need to tell him, don't run the kickoffs back from in the end zone.
Bill, don't start talking about the 60-year-old ladies again.
Yeah. She knows more than
our 60-year-old women fans know more football than our coaches. I'm convinced of.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I can feel that one coming. Oh, I can see that one coming when Jeremiah started bringing it out. I thought, crap, a flag's going to come. There's going to be a flag, and he's probably not going to get out very far, and he got, what, the 13? Yeah.
It's mind-numbing, guys.
Yeah, it is.
And it's become cultural. The two coaching staffs before this had the same problem. They couldn't adjust. They couldn't adjust what they did. They couldn't adjust what they wanted to do. They would just bang their head in, and now they're down in Orlando doing the same thing, banging their head into a wall, wondering why it's not working. This coaching staff is now doing the same thing. They're banging their head into a wall, trying to figure out, well, we need better players. No, you don't need better players. You need to take care of the guys you've got, put them in the best situation that you can to win the ballgame.
I'm not, you know what, you probably need better players in Athens to win crucial moments. But I reject the talent argument. Hugh Freeze is 2-4 because of what he inherited. I feel like that lets him off the hook for winnable games.
Like, is Arkansas suddenly more talented than us?
No.
Oklahoma?
They are very well coached, aren't they?
They are. You watch them play, and you can see how well coached they are. They do all the little things right. Nothing catches their coaches by surprise. They know exactly what they want to do in the big situations. We don't. I don't think our coaches know what they want to do. I don't know if we've practiced what we want to do. I'd like to know from Hugh Freeze, how often have you practiced that 4th-and-1 play in a short yardage at the end of the game? Your guys should know. It's the fourth quarter. We've got a big play coming up. This is what we're going to run.
I agree 100%.
I don't think we've done it. We don't look like we've done it.
No, they don't look confident. They don't look like they have confidence in what they're doing right there.
Well, in that moment they might have had confidence to do one thing, and when there's it's sort of a 50-50 split as to which side you're going to do.
I got a call from somebody yesterday that was saying, and I don't know where they got this, that apparently the And see, I don't know if this is just message board stuff or whatever.
Oh, boy, okay.
No, just saying.
Just disclaimer.
That,
okay.
That at practice in the past week, they had practiced that and had checked to the check that Peyton made. Well, again, it sure didn't look as though everybody got that. You know, I mean, the play was not run where it looked like it was a cohesive.
I can even see the strategy behind if you go to the line in that situation and you think Georgia is prepared for an interior run with Jarquez, outsmarting them by showing run to Jarquez and then Peyton Thorne sprinting to the edge for the yard. I can sort of get that. It would clearly need to be the message to everybody. And trying to change something in that moment at the line, with the coming out of the fourth quarter when that place is in a frenzy, probably the loudest it had been all game.
Sure.
I think that it's the decision in the I think the most questionable thing about the decision to change the play is that it didn't seem to be communicated to everyone, nor could it have possibly been in that moment, so maybe you call timeout.
And that's where both your quarterback and the coach have got to, one of them's got to think, hey, this doesn't look like it's going to work. We got to call time. You've got timeouts to go. You're down 11. You've seen a team come back from 11 against you, and you know it's not insurmountable, but you need to capitalize
on the
opportunity. So somebody needs to call timeout. If you're not 100% and you don't feel like your team understands 100% what you need to do, then you've got to call timeout. I don't care if the crowd is going insane when you come back from that timeout. You'd still had better go over every possible option, which I can't believe you couldn't do in between the third and fourth quarter, Brian.
I don't either. I don't. If you wanted to have an option, right, you put that one option in, everybody understands.
You say, here's the play. It's either this or that.
Right.
And if they show this, then do that. If they show that, then do this.
Right. Everybody knows to look or whatever to get their signal for it.
I don't understand. All right. Great stuff, Jeremy. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And back to the hotline, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. A great conversation. You had a lot of the thoughts I had in the first hour all weekend. To the talent issue, does anyone remember when Auburn had an interim head coach and an offensive line coach as an offensive coordinator went to Tuscaloosa and ran for 318 yards, averaging 7 yards a carry by just running the football? So I heard your first hour, and the question I simply had for Coach Freeze is, do you not have some 12 or 22 personnel where you just line up and you run a toss sweep? You go to the line, you call it a running play and run the ball. I support Coach Freeze, but my frustration is, given Austin and Hunter, why you don't just become a power running team when the RPO stuff is clearly not working. And I would point out one other question. I was around in 1993. I think if you ran 1993's playbook right now, Auburn would probably be like 5-1. I'd love to get your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah. Especially you got big JB. And who was the left tackle that year? He was really good. Was that Will?
Who was it?
Was that Willie? Would that have been Willie Anderson?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that Willie Anderson.
That was a really good offensive line, buddy.
Yeah, Willie's in the NFL from the late 90s into the early teens, I think.
And James Bostic, once he got going downhill, was hard to stop. Willie,
I mean, no, but I think, and again, you don't want to live in nostalgia, but I think that's one of the vexing things is that you look at this group of players on offense, and you think there probably is a strategy that gets more out of them than you've gotten in the first six games. I think part of that, a big part of it's probably leaning on Hunter and Alston, but it's also, I guess, the decision to have that be the identity of the identity of the offense.
Well, you have to try to scheme things to hide your weaknesses or not let them be as exposed. And right now, Brian, Dan, I mean, I feel like Auburn's line of scrimmage, you know, we've got a couple of callers that called and want to talk about that. I think that's those are both areas, offensive and defensive line of scrimmage, offensive outside, defensive inside.
Yeah.
Auburn doesn't have, you know, superior premier players there, and it shows. It shows sometimes, and that's why at critical times, I mean, when other teams have to make that short yardage play, it's a big disadvantage for Auburn. Auburn's got to bring extra people in there to help defensively, and then offensively, it's been a struggle, you know, protecting the outside pass or against the outside pass rush.
It has been. Auburn, you know, you've got these key positions, quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, wide receiver, cornerback. Those are the premier positions in football today. And Auburn is just lacking talent-wise in some of those and talent and experience-wise in some other of those. I mean, and just maybe not getting the production you expect from some guys in those positions. It's just really – they're really hurting themselves, I feel like, in those positions.
I've been enthused by, I would say, the defensive line – players who have eligibility remaining, like to see Malik out there as early as he is in his career, and is maybe, I mean, he's no worse than your second best defensive lineman.
We haven't seen Amaris at his best yet. He's been banged up. That guy's going to be a special player. TJ Finley's redshirting, but he's going to be a really good player.
TJ Lindsey travels, which, you know, to see him out there, probably an injury away from getting some snaps. Bobby Jamison Travis, another one who
the guy's really stepped up.
Yeah. I mean,
he's got another year, I think.
There have been some additions to the program under Hugh Freeze on the defensive line that have been there.
We got a great D-line class coming into a great one. So, yes.
On the offensive line, third and short's probably, you know, you probably feel like you need to get more creative than your average team on third and short and fourth and short because and that's probably, you know, that speaks to the talent on some of these defensive lines versus, but it still seems like it's, you know, I guess getting back to the first hour, Bill, like it feels like this is the offense that Hugh Freeze wants to have
he has all the players that he wants to have.
When he has all the pieces, when he has better pass blocking from all five spots on the offensive line and maybe a better quarterback than he has right now, and experienced explosive receivers everywhere. Like when he has that, he's going to run an offense that looks like this, and it's going to be highly successful. In the meantime, it feels like he's foregoing an offense that might work. He's foregoing an offense that leans more on Jarquez and Damari than they have in the first six games to try to make his way work, which you know feels like it may have cost, and I don't know if that was the main culprit Saturday, but it feels like it's something that has cost Auburn chances at winnable games earlier this season.
Yeah, I don't disagree. All right, we need to get to our first break of hour number two. Plenty of time for you to join in.
They've got the talent to beat Missouri too.
Oh,
I'll say that. I'll say that too. If you go to Missouri, it's not the same as going to Georgia or Alabama. And I think Missouri's shown you that against Boston College and Vanderbilt and Texas A&M. Like you've got a shot. It's just a matter of making it work.
All right, we will get to our first break of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Achilles tendonitis.
ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon, 22 minutes after 5 o'clock. Dan, one of the things you sent me, and watching it on TV, you can't see everybody in there. And I thought, are you sure? When you sent me that note early on about Kinsley Loder Faustin being in the ball game, and he played a lot.
A lot.
I mean, he played a lot.
Yeah, early on, either the first, I think it was the first drive of the game.
I think it was.
I think it was the first drive of the game where Auburn's got, Auburn pulls Kane Lee off the field. I think he'd played a couple of snaps, and they go to the next man up at corner. Jay Crawford had already gotten the start. Jay Crawford's been playing a lot.
And playing pretty well.
I'm excited to see, you know, where this Jay Crawford experiment goes. But Jay Crawford's out there. And then on the other side,
Jay had 60 snaps against Georgia, and I think he played the whole game against Arkansas, if I remember correctly.
Played the whole Oklahoma game.
I mean, Oklahoma, yeah.
Yeah, after Oklahoma. And then I told Bill, I said, oh, it's 28 in there at corner.
And I went, Who's that?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm watching it on my phone. You know, we're like in the waiting room or something, and I'm on my phone, and I can't tell who's in the ball game, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And he got 20 snaps.
It's Kensley.
Which is a lot.
Yeah, that it's, game. It's Kensley, and I'm excited to see, like, that. I mean, if the silver lining would be the number of first and second.
JC came in after Kensley, right?
The number of first and second year defensive players that are making a difference in, you know what I mean? Like that's
if they could just force a turnover. That's something that has been so frustrating.
Yeah,
frustrating. It seems like for Auburn for the last few years under different coordinators, they can't seem to force turnovers.
Yeah,
and it's so frustrating. I know it's extremely frustrating for them.
But no, but I want to see. I mean, Caden Lee's got at least one more year. Now you've got Kensley in there contributing as well. 18 and 19 are both all over the field at safety. Caleb Harris and Sylvester Smith. Fewer snaps for Sylvester against Georgia, but I still think he's part of the picture at safety right now.
Well, Caleb is getting more snaps as it goes on.
You can really see Caleb coming on.
He had 46. I think Jaron had the most. He had 68. Yep. But I think Caleb was second among the safeties.
334-321-1390. Let's get back to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. I got a couple things. Okay, so everybody keeps talking about how great Peyton's throwing, and I disagree. And I'm going to go back to the last game first, okay? He had a touchdown pass to number 11. He's running a post all the way to the left side of the field. He's beat the guy by 2 or 3 yards. If you throw the ball and lead him towards the left side of the end zone, he catches that ball and walks in like it's nothing. He had the guy totally beat. Peyton threw the ball back behind him and up over his head where he had to turn and make a great catch. And it was a great catch, by the way. We have had receivers all the time that will just continue on the route and then the ball goes over their head. I think that was a great catch. On the other touchdown to number 5, the ball was well underthrown. He threw it short, and he had to slow down and then jump up, and then the defender got there and could have made a great play and knocked it down, and he still made the catch. So I think those were two great catches, but I think they were both underthrown. Then you go to this game, and the same thing happened on number 11. That was a bad pass. It was too short. He had to come back, and then the defender got in 11's eyes, and so that's what caused him to drop it. I think if he throws it 2 yards deeper in the end zone, that's a touchdown easily. And the same thing happened to Cam Coleman. He threw the ball too short. Cam had to come back, and then the guy made the play on the ball. He's underthrowing all these wide open guys, and that's part of it. Now on the play that we're talking about, on the fourth down, I think what the play should have been, what should have happened, was that they should have ran the play, and if Peyton wanted to keep the ball, let the defender from the right crash down on Hunter, and you keep it, and then you take off to the corner and you get the first down. I think he called off the play to Hunter, so then Hunter didn't run to the left. Hunter then turned and went for the guy, and then that totally messed the play up. I think if you do run the play the way it's drawn up, you hand the ball to Hunter, and then if the guy crashes on Hunter, then you pull it. If the guy crashes on you, then you let Hunter take it. And
you're saying keep Hunter in the pistol behind him on that play, and
just run the play the way it was called. And then as you're handing the ball to Hunter, if you think the guy's going to tackle him from behind, which it looked like he might have been able to, but I would have trusted Hunter to break through that tackle and get the yard.
I agree, Pat.
You only needed a yard.
I agree with that, but I also feel like there are a million possibilities as far as what Auburn could have done that would have been better than what.
Oh, no, I agree.
What happened on fourth and one?
I agree.
How about Vandy's fourth and one call against Alabama?
They went for it, didn't they?
Get Pat started on Vandy and that quarterback.
That was dangerous as hell with the Vandy.
Yeah, it really was. But he doesn't care. I mean, he is.
And folks
that post-game interview is all you need to know about.
And folks can fall. And
which
Pat,
I love.
Pat, right. I don't disagree with too much. I thought the throw to Malcolm was okay, but I agree with pretty much everything else. There's also the throw, and I haven't heard too much talk about this one. There's Peyton is rolling out of the pocket, and he underthrows one to a receiver in the end zone. He throws it as he's getting hit.
Yeah, that was a touchdown.
And if he lets that one go a little bit earlier, I mean, that receiver is alone in the back of the end zone, and the ball lands sort of at his feet, And it felt like that was a misfire too. I still think, Pat, like it's a totally fair criticism to say Hugh Freeze should have recognized these problems last year, that some of them were going to be a lot harder to fix than just upgrading the receivers and the play calling, and maybe he should have gone shopping for a receiver in the quarterback portal.
And 100% agree in hindsight,
yeah.
But the thing is, you don't know until they're out there on the field.
No, I'm still apprehensive about making a switch because I don't think you're getting better production from someone else in the quarterback room right now. Elsewhere, I don't know if that's going to happen immediately. But I know there's been a lot of talk about the Vanderbilt quarterback and Pavia, and like whether or not Auburn should have. It feels like a lot of teams missed not wanting that guy. If Vanderbilt
times.
Was able to get,
they missed coming out of high school. They missed after the portal.
And you can probably
people
put
still don't you know believe that he's as good as he is.
And you can probably put Auburn on that list because that guy's a winner.
He is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had Cam Ward. I mean, I'd have paid $3 million for that guy, and it would have been easy money. But also, if you go back to last week,
you give me $3 million, I'll find you the next Cam Ward. I promise, and I guarantee it.
Don't think if you did a GoFundMe page right now that every Auburn fan would pay $20 or $30, and we would be 5-0, and we'd be happy as heck. You don't think that's worth the money? I think squabbling over $2 million on a quarterback is the most dumbest thing in the world to me. That is nothing to go versus a 3-9 season versus a possible playoff team. That $2 million is nothing.
We're going to ship it over to Andy when he comes in Wednesday, so they'll know who to contact.
I will say that I feel very confident. I'm not guaranteeing
I think they know who to contact.
That they're going to go after
that. Auburn is going to go after
the portal.
Yeah, at the top names in the portal this year, and if Auburn's not involved, I will be extremely surprised. Yeah.
And I think that they also want to tell Deuce Knight that he will have the opportunity to come in and compete immediately.
I think Deuce Knight understands that there's going to be competition.
Yeah.
And there's going to be veteran competition.
But if Auburn's top two options at quarterback in the spring next year are Hank and Deuce or Walker and Deuce, if it's nobody with a track record as a college quarterback, you feel like they probably missed an opportunity in December to go in. And you don't know who it's going to be, but it just feels like there are, if you want to go quarterback shopping in December, if you're an SEC program with resources and this kind of talent on the offense, you could very well catch a pretty big fish.
Yeah, no, I know. If there's some way to do
save a couple of dollars for a proven left tackle next year, too.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guarantee if you did a GoFundMe page for quarterback and we had to get a portal guy, I guarantee you everybody would chip in $20. I mean, it's way better than what we're going through right now. I mean, I'll take that $20.
Some local establishment could have portal night in November where you pass the hat around.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm just saying, we need a quarterback.
Right, portal Fridays.
Yeah, War Eagle.
Appreciate it, bud.
Hey, these are great marketing ideas you got here.
Some people say my talents are underutilized, your point about the left tackle is a pretty good
veteran left tackle is something that Auburn needs to save.
Buy 20,000 chicken wings to get one quarterback free.
Let me ask you, because we're halfway through the season, Brian.
Yes.
And Bill, I mean, we know who on the offensive line has eligibility remaining of the current starters.
Of the current
starters. Going from left to right.
Connor's a true sophomore.
Percy does not. He's a senior.
Right.
Dylan Wade might have.
I believe Dylan Wade has a year.
It depends.
We were talking about there's a year where Dylan Wade might have redshirted. There's
now,
a year where I believe.
Tulsa says, according to the Tulsa stats, he played 5 games.
And I believe there's a game where a game where his participation is in question.
Right.
Because there's another place that says he did not.
Having played in 5 games. Right. And then the Tulsa media guide said started 17 games
and then
over these 2 years.
Right.
And it's like PFF for one of the other places that track it only has.
Had him with 16 games, only, playing right. 4 games
yeah,
1 year.
Yeah, does not have him on
four,
the.
He and, might.
And we know that participation list for media relations is not.
Not is, necessarily. Right.
Not the final stats.
No, yep. It's not.
Right.
And then Jeremiah. Center Connor will be back for sure. Jeremiah Wright is just a fifth-year junior.
Right. He has a year if he wants it.
Yep. And then right tackle Isaiah is a senior.
Does not.
I don't think he has one.
Yeah, two tall used.
Two for sure, and maybe a third who could come back.
Tuttle utilized both of his 2 years of eligibility in junior college without redshirting.
Right.
It's fashionable, especially for offensive linemen, to redshirt one of your 2 years in junior college to save yourself some eligibility. Tuttle did not do that, so he's playing his final year, and I'm worried how much we're going to see of him these final six games, because he looked pretty badly hurt on Saturday in the Georgia game. He's been fighting that lower body injury off all season. But I think, I mean, between Connor, Wade, and Jeremiah, could Auburn feel like they have some pieces that could?
As Bill said, they've got to get a left tackle.
That would give you a strong middle of the line.
Braden Joyner is probably the next ready guy.
Right. So
DeAndre Carter, who's redshirting this year, is going to be a guy who's going to play early.
So I think you'd feel pretty good about the interior, but boy, you really could use a proven left tackle.
Yes.
And if you feel like you have two guards other than Wade, I wonder if Wade.
Oh, excuse me, Dylan Wade's listed as a junior. I was wrong there. Yeah. He is listed as a junior. Have a year.
Then he can be your right tackle.
Yeah.
A left tackle. That's what you've got to do. You got to target. You're going to target a quarterback and as good a left tackle as you can get. And I mentioned Fernando Carmona a while ago.
Yep.
He is burying people there at Arkansas.
You may need a right tackle also. We'll see.
You might. All right. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in here on the Monday Drive.
827502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Monday with Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Back to the phone, and Anthony is up next. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, Bill. How you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Good to hear from you, Anthony.
Thanks. It's been a minute. Now, I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch Alabama and Vanderbilt or not, but...
Yeah, I did.
Has Alabama...
Not all of it,
has
but...
Not all, but enough to
satisfied.
Has Alabama fallen that much, or has Vandy that much improved, in your opinion, from what you saw?
Alabama's not what they've been. Vandy is much better. Diego Pavia is, as Dan, was it Dan or Brian? I mean, he's a winner.
It was me. Yeah.
He is a winner.
Alabama played down to their opponent and got beat.
Alabama, though, defensively, they've got some problems there. Defensively,
Anthony, you've been calling a while.
Yeah.
You've seen quarterbacks show up on lifeless programs and raise the dead before, right? Like in a year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened at Auburn a couple of times. I think that's what Pavi is doing this season. I wonder. I mean, not to take anything away from some of the other guys there, but I wonder how much better Vandy is at a lot of other positions than they were last season.
He brings his player. He brings the teammates up,
and he's willing them to win and making just superhuman plays.
You know, it's an unusual situation they got there when you bring in Jerry Keel, a former head coach. You know, he's there on the sideline, and every time Pavia comes to the sideline, he goes to see him. He doesn't go to see the offensive coordinator. Or the head coach, from what I could tell, he goes see Jerry Keel, and he gives him whatever instructions or directions, and that's what he does. And for a head coach to be able to work with another guy like that, to put aside any kind of egos or whatnot, and just go to the table of brotherhood, it's a very unusual situation. But so far, it is working, and it just got magic going on up there.
It really does. And Dan brought up something that I'd forgotten. Vandy's offensive coordinator, who, by the way, is up in the box, was the offensive coordinator for Jerry Keel and Diego Pavia last year. So I mean, they've got a great situation there. And Jerry Keel, I believe he's just like an analyst.
Yeah, about a week after the season ended last year, Vanderbilt hired Tim Beck. Not the Tim Beck who coaches Coastal Carolina. That's also the name of Coastal Carolina's head coach. But Tim Beck is the offensive coordinator at Vanderbilt. He was the offensive coordinator at New Mexico State last year. Was national champion assistant coach at Pittsburgh State, a D2 powerhouse for a long time. This is an experienced veteran coach, knows what he's doing, and he brought. It seems like there was very little buzz on Pavia in the portal because Pavia was going to follow his offensive coordinator and an offense that he runs extremely well to Vanderbilt rather than trying to learn a new system. So, again, I don't know what kind of market there was.
And then Jerry Keel comes along as well. So, I mean, they've got a great situation there for this year for sure.
You know, it just goes to show you, I guess, transfer portal and NIL money and bringing a former head coach along to be able to coexist and look like it's working good for them. I guess maybe other people may try it too. We'll see what happens. But at this point, based on what you've seen, you think Vandy got any chance to maybe win enough to qualify for a bowl?
I do.
I mean, I do. Vanderbilt took – it wasn't a one-game shocking performance. Yeah, Vanderbilt lost at the buzzer to Georgia State and Del McGee, and they trounced Virginia Tech, remember, early
in double overtime.
Now Virginia Tech came back and made that game interesting, but Vandy jumped all over Virginia Tech to open the season, and that's a Virginia Tech team that's gone toe-to-toe with some heavyweights this year. Should have beaten Miami. But then you've got a I think Vanderbilt's got – I don't know what's going to happen at Kentucky on Saturday with Vanderbilt.
If their heads are back out of the clouds, but they can play with them for sure.
They've got Ball State. They've got South Carolina. They've already won three games. I think Vanderbilt's got – they've got Auburn.
They're definitely bowling.
You know, I mean, yeah, I think Vanderbilt has a shot at three more wins and a bowl game.
Well, if they go ahead and win this weekend, it'll put them at 4-2, and that'll make things a whole lot easier to get two more wins.
There's no guarantee Auburn's going to beat them when they come down here.
Right, so it'd be fun to see. Guys, I appreciate it.
Hey, good hearing from you, Anthony.
Vandy is a physical football team and won the line of scrimmage against Alabama. I would not describe this Auburn team as a physical football team right now.
They control the ball they had 42 minutes time of possession against Alabama.
Would you describe Auburn as more of a –
can we talk about Auburn's defensive front? I mean, Auburn's defensive front isn't as talented as Alabama's.
Mm-mm.
Auburn's defensive front had a pretty good game against Oklahoma, right? Like, they were able to keep Oklahoma pretty bottled up. Georgia was a much – Georgia is
– I'm more concerned about Pavia.
Georgia has a very good offensive line.
Yeah, Georgia is. I want to see what the line of scrimmage looks like in Columbia, Missouri in 2 weeks. I want to see what Auburn looks like. And you're right, Brian. I think to this point, it would be accurate, despite Auburn's success running the ball with Jarquez and Damari, I think it would be accurate to describe Auburn as more of a finesse offense than a power offense. And that is something they maybe need to, if you can adjust that dial, if you can move, you know, if you can move it from, if it's 0 to 10, Bill, maybe it goes to 11, like Spinal Tap, right? I don't know where we're set right now on power to finesse.
I don't think it's above 5.
But would you say maybe consider dial? I'm making dial gestures with
dialing it up a little bit,
or switching it maybe closer to the finesse side to the power side. Like, it feels like it's an opportunity for Auburn's offense over these next couple of games.
334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. Love for you to join in while we got a minute or two before the next break. You mentioned your Monday musings a little earlier. The musical musings. What were the other musings and thoughts presented by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce?
Well, I appreciate that. And I just wanted to write about, you know, I know the sky is kind of falling for Auburn football right now. 3 consecutive losing seasons and maybe a fourth.
How about
in the middle of it?
Auburn is 2-7 in their last 9 games.
Tough. But the turnaround could be just 12 days away. And this team, if it holds on to this recruiting class and continues to bring in talent and better talent from the portal, it could be competing for a spot in the playoffs this time next year. That's not out of the question for this program.
No, but they need to turn it around so there is that proof of concept on the field.
Yes,
to try to hang on to the class.
Right, and what's amazing to me is they're still adding big pieces to this class right now.
And
in the
we
midst
haven't
of this.
Talked to you since, yeah, we should. Since we should the talk. Addition of
honestly,
Deuce.
The most important thing that happened last week was not what happened in Athens. It was what happened in Mississippi. I'm not sure what town Deuce is from.
Lucedale, isn't it?
Yeah, there you go, Lucedale. An amazing pickup for Auburn, right? This is one of the top quarterbacks in the country. I think we have a number 2 dual threat quarterback, a perfect fit for this offense in that he can run. He has got a cannon for an arm. And if you watch him play, he plays with a just a calmness about him. Right, he just looks like he's in control and very good. He can move a little bit in the pocket, make adjustments to make throws.
He's a state champion long jumper and high jumper.
Yep, great athlete. And you can see he's going to grow into his body more. He looks tall.
He's 6'5".
Yeah, a little bit skinny now, but you know he's going to fill out a lot more. And hey, terrific pickup. This guy was so committed to Notre Dame 3 or 4 months ago when Auburn had just recruited the heck out of him.
He and Marcus Freeman, I mean, it obviously had a great relationship.
Yep, and Auburn did a great job recruiting him, and that's a great sign, I think, that maybe this class is not going to go the way of Florida and the way that class did and how Billy Napier has sort of fallen off the track here as far as his time at Florida, that maybe even if things don't improve as much as you'd like them to improve on the field this fall, that Auburn can hang on this class and still have some momentum going into the next year.
Well, I feel like we've been saying this for a little while with Napier.
This is a nice win over an in-state win.
This is the game. I mean, this feels like if you can go to Knoxville and beat Tennessee, and I'm curious about Nico limping off the field after that last play of the game, and what kind of Nico you're going to see on Saturday. If you go to Tennessee and win, I feel like the talk's over this season.
Florida, I agree. The talk is over for there, and then people are wondering what happened to Tennessee. You know, I mean, the talk will then turn to what's going on in Knoxville as opposed to who's next in Gainesville.
I believe the lines there are 2 touchdowns right now. I think Tennessee's about a two touchdown plus favorite Saturday against Florida. I think if Florida goes there and it's an ugly one-sided thing, you sort of would start to wonder, like, you've been blown out twice in conference. What more do you need to see from Napier?
Yeah, I feel and like that's what Auburn, just one more bad loss away.
Well, that's what Auburn can't afford. They can't afford to not be competitive. Auburn had, you know, I mean, the thing is right now, people are so frustrated because they feel like Auburn should have won some ball games. It's not like Cali. They've just been outclassed out there on the field, and they shouldn't be. So that's what happened to Florida, really, that got things spiraling for them a year ago.
It's what happened, I think, looking uncompetitive in a couple of games at the end of the Harsin era convinced people that it was time to make the move, among other things
and
going wrong.
Incredibly bad recruiting.
And the lack of
stupendously
of
bad.
The lack of recruiting to be able to point to also. And then
that
I
was getting worse. Right. Amazingly.
Hard to get worse than zero, but it seemed like it was.
You know what?
Because you were losing you were losing any players that were any good as well.
And you know, down 11 with the ball when the fourth quarter starts against Georgia in Athens, like if you weren't outclassed.
You could be in a whole worse position than that.
No, if you weren't outclassed there, then I wonder how many teams left on your schedule other than Alabama have the potential.
Yeah,
to
have the potential, but I mean, we've seen as Anthony was saying, this isn't your Alabama team from the last few years.
No,
from the last 17 years.
You're right. They would be the one on the schedule. Seemingly, I mean, I know A&M just played really well.
They are the most talented team left on Auburn's schedule.
I mean, A&M's got some impressive wins.
They do. A&M has been very impressive, but Alabama's roster, I think, still stacks up very well. A&M had that class, though, that was as good as anybody has signed.
And I think A&M's, you know, that's one of the Notre Dame things, too, where, like, Notre Dame, you could say, well, A&M lost. Like, Notre Dame can hang at the line of scrimmage, too. Yeah, like, Notre Dame made some mistakes in their slip-up. But, like, that's an A&M team that probably says, like, we're top tier of the league at the line. And if you...
Hey, they're 3-0 in the league.
And they're 3-0. They're the only
3-0 team.
3-0 team in the
As a matter of fact, I think there are only three teams in the league that don't have a conference loss.
Yeah, they're the only 3-0 team in the SEC right now, as a matter of fact. Mike Elko, early success there. But it's no, I mean, it's got to be frustrating nevertheless.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.